Chris had thought about maybe just starting with some sort of silence or sort of a quick,
perfect,
quick, grounding,
sure,
practice.
Yeah, let's do that.
Good at that.
I think just a little bit of silence is good.
Do you want me to?
Yeah. Sure. All
right. So anyway, we were reading lots of articles of yours. It's been great.
Great.
The book didn't arrive. So, you know, that's all right.
Sure.
One theme I noticed, well, it's the subtitle of your book, The Promise and Peril, and that's sort of a repeating theme. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if we could talk a little bit about just a little bit about that. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, I see there's the we're in a time of peril crisis. It's the first global truth, all right. And then we could talk about just that, or but there's also this other deep sense that this crisis brings opportunity, and maybe people want to speak to a bit of that part of your
right. Well, the phrase itself comes from. I didn't know this at the time, actually. It comes from the Earth Charter, which is this wonderful document that came out some years ago. And the preamble starts something about this. We live at a time of great peril and promise. Somehow they use those two words together, and then I inherited that phrase from Jonah Macy, who's one of my teachers. And I thought she had sort of coined it, and she took it from this document. And the reason that I kind of wanted it to be prominent, like the subtitle of the book, and as of like a prominent idea, is that we have to, sort of like the first step in any kind of recovery project or whatever, is to admit that there's a problem, like that there's something serious going on. Mm-hmm. You don't go to the doctor or the hospital unless there's something really wrong, you know, and and the healing process can't begin. You know, doctors don't go around looking for, you know, what's wrong most of the time anyway. So there's something profound about being able to drop into that space of knowing what's going on. So, you know, most of us or anybody who's listening to this or reading the article will know, oh, I know what's going on. You know, there's so many horrible things, ecological, and, you know, the book is focused primarily on the ecological crises. But, of course, those are all related to the economic crisis, education crisis. The sort of convergence of crises is what we're waking up to. So people say, oh, I know all that. I know how many rainforest acres are being cut down every day, and I know how many species we're losing. But, you know, I've heard that bit, you know. So the part that I want to bring into it is that we kind of know this information here, but we don't really know it in our hearts. We don't really, we haven't taken it in. And most of it is actually so overwhelming that we aren't, our nervous systems aren't actually capable of taking in that information most of the time. There's so much grief that's wanting to be felt in the world. And there's just so much despair kind of arising from the natural world itself. I mean, not to say that the natural world isn't tremendously beautiful still. In fact, that's what inspires our despair. It's this like immense love that we have for the natural world that we see. So by focusing on the peril and promise and putting peril first and having it as the first global truth, really, it's kind of this invitation to, like, you know, if we're going to start any kind of healing process, we have to go into these spaces and we have to do it. And we have to do them in a way that's empowering and that's safe. And that's not overwhelming, because for most of us, most of the time, it's completely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just to take even just one example of the mass extinction, you know, that's going on right now. It's the largest shift that's happened in 65 million years. And human beings at most have been around in their current form for like 3 to 4 million years. So it's just, it's not even something we can, we can barely conceive of it mentally. And in terms of our heart space, we that's kind of my viewpoint, is that we're really not capable of it, but somehow we're being asked to something that's being asked of it. Being asked to extend the capacity of our heart to take in some of this information, not just mentally, but in our whole, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, that's, you know, the word citta is both heart and mind. It's not, there's not a separate entity for each. There's just one word that means, you know, the same thing. And it's sort of intuitively feels right. Like when we say, oh, I know this is right. You know, we say, I know, we put our hand here. Like, we know this is like the seat of wisdom, you know? So, you know, there's, like I said, this invitation to go beyond, like, oh, I know the statistics of this and whatever. And the book does, like, present the statistics as kind of a way in, but there is a lot of deeper work that just needs to be done and to be felt. And I mentioned Joanna. One of the things that she does is helps to do a lot of this grief work in groups, and it really helps in groups. Like, individually, it can be overwhelming, but if we, like, do it together and we, like, you know, all four of us right here were to acknowledge our unspoken pain for the world and what's going on, you know, that in itself would just be powerful. You know, there would be a lot that would emerge from that. And there's this whole series of exercises that, you know, she does and in her workshops, and that, you know, I picked up on a few of them and we'll be teaching some of them. They're going through some of them tomorrow. So that's the peril part. And of course the promise part is to hold, and on the other hand, the amazing things that are happening all around, you know, banging pots and the Occupy movement and all these other things that are emerging that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, people would never have imagined, just kind of arising. And Ian's is doing a wonderful job documenting all of this, all of these awakenings all over the world. So it's just this, you know, Paul Hawken talks about it as the immune response system of the world. It's just sort of the earth is kind of waking up. And that kind of brings me to another one of my points, is that this whole shift in consciousness that people talk about and no one can quite put their finger on is, for me, it's something that's coming from the earth itself. So, I mean, there's some fascinating astrological alignments and the Mayan calendar and all that kind of stuff is, to me, totally fascinating, but from in my own experience in my life and from my own path or whatever, what I've learned is that this the impetus for change and for evolution is coming from the earth itself. The whole earth community is sort of saying, you know, look how powerful this one species has become, you know, and putting all other forms of life in jeopardy and the whole web of life, you know, potentially sort of unraveling. So yeah, there's something to me it's important for me to kind of remember that, you know, because I know I personally, I sort of have a philosophic mind who really loves to grab onto ideas and fascinating systems and all that. And for me, it's really important to always kind of keep, you know, I'll indulge in that for sure. And I find some inspiration in that in astrology and in my calendar stuff. But ultimately, it's always coming back to this grounding, this sense of ground and like the wisdom of the earth. You know, it's all, everything else is derivative. You know, the earth is primary. Everything comes from the earth. We come from the earth. You know, it might be a slightly controversial idea in a sort of Christian-based society, but our consciousness as well comes from Earth. Where else could it come from? Sure. You know, if we're spiritual beings, where does spirituality come from? It comes from the wisdom of the Earth itself. You know, so so just always coming back to that for me is like this touchstone, and that's why for me the book is focused largely on ecological issues because it's for me very just the heart of it.
For sure. Can I ask a couple follow-up questions then on that? Just there's a few little points. If we cycle back to the peril part, and you mentioned Joanna Macy's work, and which I think is really important. And I guess I wanted to ask you, you know, you're talking about peril, so I want to ask you, my question is there a better way to talk about this, the one that doesn't scare people? So how are you finding successes in speaking that part of the story? Mm-hmm. Because of the grief we have, because of probably the guilt and shame that we feel, things like this, right? And also the environmental, and this is not what I sense from your work at all, but the environmental movement has been, you know, criticized for using, you know, too much doom and gloom language. I heard this woman the other day wrote a book on extinction, and she was saying she's a literary professor, and it's about forms that talk of environmental crisis have taken in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. The dominant form has been a dirge and a lament. Yeah. So anyway, you see that. So how, I mean, you're still going in there and it's necessary. We have to confront that. I just wanted to even get some advice for myself, and we're writers as well, you know, trying to put a voice out there, and we're very concerned about this. But is there a better or worse way to talk about the peril part?
There is, of course, and I'm right with you. I'm not sure that I myself know an ideal way or a graceful way to do it, because it varies from person to person. Everybody's sort of ready to hear certain things,
right,
and other people aren't ready. You know, I mean, I just gave a talk last night, and you know, of course, started out with talking a little bit about the peril, and three people left, you know, and just, you know. and there weren't that many people there to begin with, so it was like, wow, you know, this is something to be very sensitive about, you know, especially for a general audience. I mean, it might be a different situation if you're talking to people who are initiated, essentially. Yes. I mean, it's a kind of initiation that people have to go through. They have to go into this dark space in order to kind of pull out the treasures, you know, that are there, and the treasures are the exact sort of reflection of what draws us in the first place. So what draws us into that grief is, like I said, our love for the world. So we have to kind of retrieve that love and say, oh yeah, the love is what's making me feel despair right now. Mm-hmm. And sort of unwrap it and take it out of its hiding place there. And our fear, for example, is just our desire for justice or whatever. You know, the flip side of it is the trust that we have, that when we speak our fear to somebody else, that they won't, you know, sort of capitalize on it in some way. So there's always this, you know, tantric other side of something that we can claim by going into the pain. But you're right. I mean, it's a very important issue, and I'm not sure that I have a really good answer. It's something that I, of course, think about myself as well. Like, what's the best way to break the news to somebody. I mean, even last night I actually mentioned the sixth mass extinction, and I said, well, okay, who here knows about that? Nobody in the room.
Yeah.
You know, so I got to be the guy in their life, you know.
So telling you here, yeah. Big extinction going on.
Yeah.
It's really big.
That's biggest thing in 6.5 million years. You'll never, you know, and that's what I... You know, that's what I realize when I give that kind of information, is that person has to carry that around for the rest of their life.
Right.
It's not something you can just go home and process and then go on with it. It's just there. It's so big and so overwhelming that, you know, in my latest article, I think I just used the phrase that all of us will spend the rest of our lives processing that. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you can ever work through it. I mean, the word, like, tragedy doesn't even...
No.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even...
No.
It's just the word. It's a sound that doesn't even relate to what's the reality of what's going on. So, but, you know, I think there are certainly some tactics that involve, you know, not clobbering people with statistics. And, you know, that was actually something that was a little bit of a touchy thing in my book is that I was, as I was researching all of the peril and the difficult things, I found a lot of, for me, it was very jarring to see some statistics and to like know, again, like how many acres of rainforest are every day and these kinds of things. And then I ran it by a few of my professors, and they said, you know, that's not going to work. You know, people kind of know the statistics. They don't, statistics for them, they're not going to, for me it was like eye-opening, but for some people, a lot of people, I think maybe most people, it can be overwhelming. So just so just somehow even delicately presenting the idea that, you know, there's a lot of things going on environmentally that we need to pay attention to. You know, we need to devote some attention to it. Just breaking that idea in itself, you know, and then maybe you can just kind of ease your way into a conversation and see what people know, because the other side of it is that most people on some level kind of are aware of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It might be unconscious or it might be subconscious, but they somehow in their body or in their lives, they know they have this feeling of something's not quite right.
You know? Why the turning away is so powerful.
Yeah.
Because
exactly. You feel it, you know, sort of in your body. In all, you know, we are the body of the earth, so it's only natural that we, you know,
right.
kind of the walking, talking component of the earth. So just, it's natural that we would feel something is wrong, you know. Right. So for a lot of people, I think it's just about helping them find the language for it, you know, helping them find the right words for what they're already feeling and what they're already experiencing.
And maybe just speaking to it or putting it on the table rather than letting it sit below the surface, that, what might be brought out by that discourse.
And that's the thing. I mean, we live in a culture where we tend to privatize all of our grief. Mm. You know, if you're upset about the environmental crisis, well, how did your mother treat you when you were young? You know, I mean, it's all about like you and what's your personal history. Right. And there's no room in our cultural discourse for like taking in the grief and the pain of the world that we live in, you know, as though that's either insignificant or, you know, but so there's just something very powerful about, I know this is kind of like the same theme I'm talking about, but there's something powerful about just confronting it and sharing it and just realizing, you know, we all feel it. It's all part of us. So just making that acknowledgement in itself is powerful, even without saying, okay, here's what we do about it.
Right.
Just acknowledging that it's there is already like moving mountains, you know, mountains of kind of obscuration that are there that have been kind of built up over all this time, people not talking about it and not sharing.